Welcome to the Garage Spiel Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by your friends at Bomb Tools Unlimited, Stallwilly Tools North America, and Eurodiagnostic Resources. Learn more at www.bombtools.com, www.stallwilly.com, and www.eurodiagnostics.com. Bomb Tools Unlimited, Stallwilly Tools North America, and Eurodiagnostic Resources are proud to underwrite this Garage Spiel podcast. This is part one of our interview with Bob Beckman, owner of Beckman Technologies and Blue Link Diagnostic Solutions.
Today, we're talking with Bob Beckman, the owner of Beckman Technologies in Durham, North Carolina. Bob's been rebuilding Mercedes-Benz electrical components for over 20 years, and he's well-known and highly regarded in the Mercedes-Benz repair community. Bob, thanks for giving us a few minutes to talk to you. Why don't we start by asking you to give us an insight about Beckman Technologies.
Well, thank you guys for coming to Durham. Tell you a little bit about Beckman Technologies. Like I said, we started about 20 years ago. Found an opportunity with Mercedes-Benz Electronics. The first parts were the cruise control amplifiers in the 1980s. Anybody that's been working on Mercedes certainly remembers those, that if you had a 5 or 7 year old car, you'd have a problem with your cruise control, and the parts were very, very expensive. So the way it kind of the business kind of started is my brother Tom did a Mercedes-Benz apprenticeship program in Stuttgart, and that was after high school, and he did a trade school and did a 4-year program at Mercedes as to how to build, repair, and do pretty much anything about cars. And when he finished that, he came over to the United States and started turning a wrench at one of the local dealers and started bringing parts home and suggested to me that, wow, these are so expensive, and customers were declining repairs because the parts were so expensive, and suggested that I start building these parts. And I started to take some of them apart and just realized, well, there isn't that much wrong with them. It's pretty straightforward. There are always common pattern failures in all these parts. You know, why don't we start fixing some of them instead of throwing them away and, you know, filling the landfills? So we made some test fixtures for these cruise control amplifiers and didn't really think much of it, and fixed a bunch of the parts for some of the techs in the dealership. They were driving around with the cars and decided that they would try these parts out, and everything worked out really well, but never really thought much of it as far as a business. And what happened is these techs left the dealership, started to work for independents, or started their own businesses. So months later, I started getting calls from these shops to, you know, can you fix these parts? And we got to know a lot of the local businesses, and they started handing us parts. Well, can you fix these two and these two? And we just came home, and that's kind of how the business started, and kind of grown ever since. There's certainly problems with this type of business because, as with any rebuilder, you know, cores is a finite resource. I know that's...
About to ask you about that as far as, do you have any problems getting cores for any of these components?
Oh, absolutely. That's been the limiting factor in this type of business, and it certainly is for just about anybody that does any kind of remanufacturing. Cores are a finite resource. And during my earlier years, there were some other competitors, and they still are, and it became very, very ugly. The competitiveness of buying cores, the prices escalated, and everybody was trying to buy each other's cores from everybody, and it got real ugly.
I remember years ago when CCI, you remember that company?
Yes, I do.
They
grew very rapidly.
Yeah, and then weren't they dealing with Worldpac at the time?
They were dealing with Worldpac, and there were some other companies that did the same thing, and there was a three-way struggle of people looking for the same parts and seeing who could pay more for what. And we, at that point, decided we weren't going to get caught up in that and kind of took a step back and really had a different philosophies when it came to buying cores. And we didn't publish prices of lists of cores of what we pay, because every week it would change and somebody else would raise the price, and it became, you know, cat and mouse game. So we suggested that if people had some parts, they would send us a list and we would give them the best price, market price at the time. And that worked out well, and it kept us going, and we had sufficient parts, but it was never kind of a situation where we could grow.
Is this still an issue?
It's still, to some degree. At this point, we've kind of positioned ourselves to take some of the most high-tech parts, not as much of the commodity work. So there's not as much demand for some of these very specific high-tech parts.
Is this one of the reasons why you mainly stick to Mercedes?
Yes. Yeah, we used to do a little bit of other German cars and some Asian, but it became very apparent that the technology was advancing faster than we could keep up. And then instead of trying to do everything kind of halfway, just stick to what we know best and then focus on Mercedes and kind of limit our scope. And that, you know, that seems to have worked for us.
Yeah, that does make sense, because I know years ago there, you know, just by, and you know, this automotive world is really a small world in its own sense. Reasons for doing what you did, because, you know, I think I had asked you that one time before about getting into the BMW side of the rebuilding, because there's a huge market for that too.
There absolutely is. And we, you know, we continue to ask ourselves, you know, do we want to go down the path of trying to get expertise? But you've run into the same problems. Core availability, having to hunt them down. Yes, we have a lot of Mercedes customers, and many of them overlap with BMW, but we would still have to learn. There'd be a learning curve. And I, unfortunately, you know, I think to go that route at this point is not an area where I want to grow. This type of business has self-limitations based on the cores that you can get, so it's self-limiting no matter what you do. So to expand to other car lines, I think, would dilute our expertise in what we're doing, and it's better for us to stay focused.
Well, on that note, what do you think are the top Mercedes-Benz problem areas that you are seeing electronic-wise?
That all depends on how much time you got.
Yeah.
We see there's a lot of things. There are still wonderful cars, but there is a lot of technology involved in the cars. There's kind of, we see two competing forces, not just in Mercedes, but in the automotive industry. The technology is becoming much more technology in the vehicles, and yet a lot of the components are becoming less and less remanufacturable in the common sense. So we see these competing things, you know, so it kind of balances it out. You know, we find year to year, we find opportunities, and it's by talking to our customers, visiting with them, seeing, you know, what the new models and what warranty data is for the vehicles, and see where they're having problems, and then pick out those parts where we can sell product or provide product.
Well, I mean, you know, that too, and the complexity of these control units now, where they're stuffing more stuff in one control unit.
They are,
you know, from the old days with the HFM, the DM, and the EACC, ISC, now it's all stuffed into an ME control unit. So they're basically stuffing a whole lot more technology in one control unit. Ergo, I guess that would increase your diagnostic issues trying to find the issue on an ME controller. And now, of course, you know, you're into this SCN and CVN coding of these modules too, which that's just another big bundle into the mix.
Yeah, the SCN coding was a necessary solution to a problem as these control units, like you say, got more and more sophisticated, had more and more functions, hence more and more coding was required to customize them to a particular vehicle. I mean, we talk about calibration files with some of the domestics and the Asian cars. They have one flash file, and you put the right flash file in for this particular car, and you're done. Mercedes has a different way of managing their software. They'll have one piece of software that'll run the ECU, and then you'll customize it to the vehicle based on how it was built. Now you make this even more complicated because Mercedes is a worldwide manufacturer. They sell similar vehicles all over the world, and they don't want to have everything unique for every country. So hence they have to make these ECUs all programmable in a way that they can be used in Australia, or that a warning will come on in the Gulf States in the instrument cluster if you're going over 130 kilometers an hour.
Ergo, the term version coding.
Version coding. And as these version codings got so complicated, the technicians couldn't do them in the field anymore. They didn't understand all the values, and they didn't know how to do it. So they came up with a solution called SCN coding, which in essence is a request to a server in Germany that knows exactly how this vehicle was built and provides you a version coding string for that particular ECU in that particular vehicle. So it simplifies it for the technician. What does it do for the aftermarket? It makes it much more complicated because there aren't the tools even available to do them manually anymore in some of these cases. Not everything, but in a lot of the ECUs requires participation with Mercedes. We got to have a long discussion as to whether that's appropriate or how they do it or they could do it better, and it's just how they've chosen to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, some things, you know, and from on here, this whole SCN, CVN thing is going off into body control modules and all of that stuff now. So, you know, that kind of brings in the question of, you know, what do you think is today's most promising technology?
Well, obviously, there's things we've been looking at. I know you and I have talked about the problems that our shops have, and you know what do we do as a industry to help our shops. There's certain areas of expertise, technical support, the training, the collaboration, the websites. What Eurodiagnostics, exactly what they're doing is allow people to group collaborate and help each other fix the cars to bring some efficiencies back in the service bay. That's number one. I think that in the last 5 to 10 years has had more impact than anything. The next step is some of the other business ventures that I've looked into. One of the companies is Blue Link Diagnostic Solutions, and we're looking specifically to allow a service bay to have access to specialized OE software in the instances when they need it. Instead of having to buy a system or pay a lot of money upfront for maintenance and learning curve, to allow an expert remotely to do diagnostics on the vehicle. I think that solution would open up a lot of opportunities to our customers where they wouldn't be afraid to take in a different brand of vehicle for some body electrical problem because they know that they'd be stuck and wouldn't be able to fix it. If they have somebody that can help them bail them out, get them out from under that car, they would be much more interested in doing that at a reasonable price.
Check out more of our Garage Spiel podcasts at www.euroautotraining.com.